Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
If we were sitting here a year ago and I told you that Canada was about to have one of the most dominant sporting years in the history of our country, the first thing you'd wonder was, well, which Canadian team is going to finally lift the Stanley Cup again? Then you might have wondered which tournaments golfer Brooke Henderson would win. Or maybe you'd have pictured a victory or two for Milos Raonic. Or maybe some Olympic qualifying in basketball or soccer. I don't know. Maybe if you were really dreaming big, you'd wonder if the Raptors could make an NBA final for the first time ever. You might have pictured a lot of things this time last year, but not this.
We the North are now we the champions, the Raptors, the 2019 NBA champs.
And even if somehow you called that one, definitely not this.
Can you believe it? Bianca Andreescu is a U.S. Open champion.
Within the span of 3 months, Canada got two impossible achievements. Both of them unlikely, both of them firsts, both of them underdog stories, and both were marked by a very uncharacteristically Canadian swagger. We might not have dreamt these moments up in advance, but someone did.
Honestly, I've been visualizing it almost every single day. So for it to become a reality is just so crazy. I guess these visualizations really, really work.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This week, the biggest stories of 2019. Today, sports, where there were two of them. Donovan Bennett is a writer, reporter, a host at Sportsnet.ca. He's also the co-host of Free Association, Sportsnet's basketball podcast. Hey, Donovan.
Hi. Based on the year in sports, maybe I should try and get a tennis podcast like At the Net or something like
listen,
that. Or serve and volley.
People would listen to that now.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, that brings us to the question that's been on my mind as we kind of sat down to talk about stories of the year. Is this the best non-Olympic year for Canadian sports in general? Seems like we won all year.
I think it has to be. And so when we look back at years, for me anyways, you kind of use them as these placeholders for where you were in your life and what happened in that year and what it meant for the country. From a sports perspective, there are specific years. You just say the number and you know exactly what that means, right? 1972, 1992, 93. We couple those ones together. Blue Jays won back-to-back World Series for people listening to this podcast that weren't alive. 1996. And I think 2019 is going to be the next one of those years. Like the 21st century hasn't been the best. But I think 2019 will be one of those years because Canadians stayed winning on multiple fronts. And they won in a big way on the courts, both basketball and tennis.
There wasn't a lot to feel optimistic about in the world in general this year, and I kind of feel like sports in this country anyway was a refuge.
Yeah, and when I look back, and everyone kind of does this at this time of year, what are the top trends on Twitter? What were the top Google searches? The top trending people in sports were Kawhi Leonard and Bianca Andreescu. The top trending topics were the Toronto Raptors, followed by the Canadian election,
right?
Followed by Bianca Andreescu. So that's where they are in an election year, and yeah, one that had a lot of its own controversy and conversation, and actually mirrored more of a traditional American election campaign than it does a Canadian one, which is oftentimes more docile. Those two massive sports stories were a big part of the conversation throughout the year, and that just shows you how transformative I think this year was in sports.
Will this finally give Canadians the swagger on the international sports stage that everybody claims we don't have, but probably we really want to?
Well, that's an operative word, because when you look at not just the fact that they won, but the way they won, how expressive they were. If we look at the example of the Raptors, upsetting arguably, you know, one of the greatest teams of all time, a team with, you know, four, maybe even five Hall of Famers, and the entire playoff run, and specifically the final series, was just a flex on how we can celebrate our own, our team. Watch parties across the country. people tearing down major intersections in Toronto, and partying on top of police cars and television cars and on top of light posts, and those scenes being sent across the world. It was like we had this big, huge party celebrating how much we loved basketball and the Raptors for the last 24 years. And then the way almost right after that, we transformed from We the North to She the North,
right.
And Bianca, a huge underdog herself in a crazy story, just at the age of 19, she just, I don't know, beats the best tennis player in the world, not once in the summer, but twice. And the way she does it, where we're not just talking about the great play, but her ferocity on the court, her swagger, her fashion, her mom's swagger and fashion, the fact that her mom is watching with a dog.
Her mom became an icon.
Totally. And so part of the reason why I think both of those stories were trending was, in a real way, they were memeable. There were specific moments that it wasn't just sporting excellence. It was almost pop culture excellence. And that's part of the things that I'll remember about them as I take them into 2020.
We kind of danced around it a little bit. And I asked you this question in the hallway the other day when we were talking about having you on. And I stumped you for about 30 seconds. But which was the Canadian sports moment of the year?
Yeah, I feel wrong doing this. Like, I almost feel like ashamed because I want my answer to be Bianca Andreescu. And I think that's actually the most unlikely of the two stories. You know, 48-7, three singles titles, and $6.5 million in earnings, all from someone who was barely in the top 100, you know, coming into the year. And now she's talking about the fact that her goal for 2020 is being ranked number one in the world. But I think it has to be the Raptors because it wasn't just a specific moment. There were so many. Kawhi's shot, Drake's many celebrations, whether it was trolling the Curry family or giving Nick Nurse, the head coach of the Toronto Raptors, a massage in the middle of the game, or him watching from the Maple Leaf Square with fans.
He wants the chips with the dip.
He wants the chips with the dip. And so the literally the biggest pop star in the world was caught up in Raptors mania and was just a fan like everybody else. And Tim Leiwicki a couple years ago said something that at the time sounded crazy. It just sounded like something Tim Leiwicki would say because he knew that it was going to get aggregated and would lead on sports shows and on Twitter. He said that he wouldn't be surprised that in a decade or so, if the Raptors were a bigger brand than the Maple Leafs. And that sounds like sacrilege. But when you saw the way the entire country came out in support of the Raptors, but more importantly, the fact that the fan base actually looked like the country, that it was literally just like our demographics, it was much younger, it was much more diverse, you kind of understand why. I mean, the team all of a sudden got really good because they got Kawhi Leonard, but that this was brewing for a while, and then the team being so good was just an expression of something that was already happening.
Well, the team was interesting because they also broke through in a way that we're talking about how Canada did. When we talk about Bianca coming into the year as, you know, barely ranked inside the top 100, just kind of an afterthought in most tournaments, that wasn't the case for the Raptors, right? The Raptors were a team who were good, but were never going to be good enough, that had a psychological block.
Yes. And even in transitioning and getting a game-changing player in Kawhi Leonard, which they got, you know, for no frills price, to be honest, because he was hurt at the time and because he didn't want to stay. Because
he was going to leave, which he did.
Place, which he did. And because he was a pending free agent. Even when that happened, if we remember, a lot of the response was, well, wait a minute. DeMar DeRozan, the previous favorite son, mean, he had a tattoo on his body that said loyal. When Chris Bosh left, he tweeted, "I got us." He was the American star after Damon Stoudemire and Tracy McGrady and Vince Carter and Chris Bosh all left. He was the American star that said, "Well, I want to stay." And we jettisoned him for someone that we all assume is also going to leave? That makes no sense. So there was some skepticism coming into Kawhi Leonard being a Toronto Raptor. So just like Raptors fans would, because it has been their existence, they were always waiting for that anvil to drop. Okay, this is good, but what? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen? And whether it was for the first game of the playoffs, yet again they lose a game one, when they lose to the Orlando Magic at the buzzer, when journeyman DJ Augustine, a former Raptor, you know, hits a big three, or when they're down in the Philadelphia series and Joel Embiid is running across the court doing an airplane celebration, or when they were down 2-0 to Milwaukee in the first round and it took double overtime to win game three. Otherwise, the series was virtually over. Or when they were facing the Golden State Warriors, who have been a juggernaut. At every point, people are like, well, this is fun, but when is the plot twist coming where they lose again? And all of a sudden, they didn't. They didn't lose again. And you saw the emotions of people who, for 24 years, after watching 228 players and 9 head coaches and a bunch of controversies, say, the Toronto Raptors are world champions? That's something that you didn't think you were going to see in your lifetime. They were the franchise that was just trying to get a young fan base with a cuddly dinosaur and fun colors and jagged pinstripes. They're the best team in the world. We can go to the Scotiabank Arena to see them, not to see the other team, because the Bulls or the Lakers are in town. There's a reason why the summer after they had won, for weeks, there were lines down the street at Real Sports buying Raptors championship merchandise package gear. There is a reason why, even though the new season has started, that's still the hottest seller at the NBA.com store. Because I think it says more about a fan base that was tied to a team, never thought that they would actually have good things happen to them, and they finally did. Bianca was just individual brilliance that came from a country where their tennis prospects are slowly coming. It just happened early. People never thought it was going to happen for the Raptors.
This is where I'm going to make my case for Bianca.
Oh, let's hear it.
So much like the Raptors were a long time coming, this was also a long time coming for Tennis Canada. It was the breakthrough of a wall that they'd been steadily pounding away at, right? And I know you say Bianca, it was an incredible individual performance. But, I mean, there have been a series of fantastic young tennis players, each getting better and better, each taking another step. You know, it started a while ago with Milos Raonic and Eugenie Bouchard, who didn't quite live up to it. But now we've got Denis Shapovalov and Felix Auger-Aliassime, and there are more in the pipeline. And it took Bianca finally beating the world's best players for everybody in Canada to turn their eyes to a program that probably a lot like Raptors fans had done with the Raptors. They'd been sort of like, okay, you know, they're going to win a few rounds. They might get into the semifinal at a major. You know, they might make a run at a low-ranked tournament. But ultimately, they're not going to compete with the Serena Williamses of the world. And for Bianca to do that and beat Serena the first time by withdrawal, and everybody to say, well, it's okay, but Serena was just saving herself for the U.S. Open. And then to come back and meet her in the final at the U.S. Open and knock down a door that no Canadian had ever knocked down. I think that's a testament to a program that was building quietly over many years and was expecting to eventually get this kind of breakthrough. And I would add, before you rebut me, Bianca's actually Canadian.
That's the distinction that I can't argue with, is that no disrespect to Chris Boucher, who was
Canadian
watching
champion.
And who had his own float and was wearing the Canadian flag and is the pride of basketball Quebec. Bianca is Canadian, and it was a collective victory. I mean, she had an outstanding year. She only lost 4 matches that she completed. But historically, if you're a Canadian tennis player, if you win a tournament, that's a rounding success. When Bianca won Indian Wells, that's a great year. When you win the Rogers Cup on home soil, that's great. And so to win the U.S. Open in New York at the age of 19, where afterwards you can't even go out and drink, Well, that you're playing with house money. Now, that's amazing. And I think to double down on your point is that it wasn't just her in isolation, that Felix and Dennis had great years, but also the men in general going to the finals of the Davis Cup and only losing to Spain, who is a tennis power.
Also never been done before.
Also never been done before. Just shows you that there is depth, that is collective. And whether it is, you know, the teenagers that are, you know, having us so excited with Tennis Canada, I think across the sporting landscape, in terms of homegrown talent, 2019, the other thing that will stick out at me, maybe a bit of a changing of the guard, but how bright the future is. I think we're really scratching the surface. You mentioned Bianca winning the Lou Marsh, and it was unanimous. And when you say that, you think, okay, well, there wasn't much competition.
In fact, there was.
Quite the opposite. You look at people who, you know, were in the final five with her, with Jordan Binnington, Andre DeGrasse, Brooke Henderson, who really could be in this conversation every year.
She's one of the five best female golfers in the world. And yeah, it's just like, okay, well, she's won some majors now, so she'll keep doing that.
Right.
That's fine.
Brooke Henderson is just doing Brooke Henderson things.
There are more Canadians in the NBA and better Canadians in the NBA than ever before. And they've now signed up, hopefully, to play for Canada next summer. Canadian pitcher dominated the National League, could have won the Cy Young Award. Like, they're in almost every sport you turn to, there is Canadian success. And yes, in the NHL, there is Connor McDavid, who is a sublime talent. But other than that, was hockey the low point for Canadian sports this year?
Yeah, probably. And not necessarily for things that were on the ice. And so the drought in terms of Canadian teams winning a Stanley Cup continues, although, you know, Canadians would say, well, the St. Louis Blues were 70% Canadian, including their goalie, Jordan Binnington.
My Bianca argument right back at
right,
me,
yeah. You know, Binnington was a finalist for the Lou Marsh Trophy. And I think all Canadians, you know, when you see a story like young Layla and the inspiration that the team got from her and she got from them, I think they were happy with the Blues going from, you know, worst on January 1, 2019 to first by the end of the season. But hockey and hockey's reckoning, and specifically with virtually all of the incidents happening in Canada, certainly that was a low light, if you will, for the sport and one of the most unfortunate hockey stories that we've seen. And when I reached out to a bunch of African-American, both present and former players, or in many cases, really African-Canadian players, and asked them if they were surprised about the bullying stories that trickled out, but specifically the racism stories that trickled out, and the one about Akeem Aliyu specifically, sadly, they all came back and said no. And in fact, if anything, in their experience, the racism that they dealt with was more pronounced in Canada than it was in the United States. And I think that's actually a sad testament that we hold hockey up to this high standard and it's part of our fabric as a country. No disrespect to lacrosse fans. It is basically our adopted official sport. And yet, at the same time, we say, well, as Canadians, we're pretty progressive and we're pretty diverse. But yet that sport historically has not been very diverse or progressive. And now we are seeing it, that reckoning happen. And many of the visible minorities in the sport say that their experience has been worse in Canada than it is in the U.S. Those things should not be mutually exclusive. We can't say that we are really proud of the sport and not feel really uncomfortable with the things about it that we really shouldn't be proud of.
Is this maybe then the year that we started to see evidence through championships in other areas of what pushing multicultural immigrants and diverse families away from the game of hockey has done to it?
I think so. I mean, I think when you look at the faces that were at the parade for Bianca in Mississauga or the parade for the Raptors in Toronto, if you are an NHL executive in their office in New York and Toronto, you're looking at it and you would be a bit envious, I think. And certainly if you're trying to grow your game both domestically and abroad, you would have to make strides for it to be more inclusive, for it to be more diverse. And I do commend Gary Bettman and the commissioner's office for the things that they've done behind the scenes to try and make that happen. But it's really going to have to start at the grassroots, because a lot of these stories are not necessarily happening in the NHL. They're happening in minor hockey. And so the sport has a real opportunity to mirror some of the inclusion and the success stories that we've seen in other sports.
Well, maybe we'll be here at this time next year talking about something that hockey's done to make a real difference, because I'd like to see it. I feel we're very close to a shift.
I hope so, but I'm a little bit more skeptical. All the people who have been outspoken on this issue, for the most part, have been people who are no longer in the game mm-hmm. and felt comfortable to speak, knowing that that code of silence won't come down on them and they won't have a penalty to speak. So I am hopeful, and I would like to be more optimistic, but right now I am pessimistic. Oh, but one thing I do know in terms of what we're talking about at this time next year, I do know that if this year is any indication, we have no idea. Because if we had the conversation at this time last year, I mean, we did have the conversation, and we were talking about Colin Kaepernick. And I think that would be not a surprise if we said, well, in a year or two, we may still be talking about Colin Kaepernick. But if we said that in 365 days, we're going to be talking about a Canadian soccer player being sold to one of the biggest clubs in the world and playing in the Champs League, that a Canadian from Alberta would lead the NCAA in rushing, that a female tennis player that is ranked 152nd in the world is going to be one of the brightest stars, not just in tennis, but in sports, and the Toronto Raptors are going to be NBA champions. I wouldn't have believed any of those things. So I have no idea what we're going to be talking about in 2020, other than, as you put it, it's probably going to be an Olympic story.
Thanks, Donovan.
Thank you.
Donovan Bennett from Sportsnet. Go check out Free Association if you're looking for a Raptors pod. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca or come back here every day this week for the biggest stories of 2019. Use your favorite podcast player. I would prefer if you used one that would allow you to rate and review us so that you can give us 5 stars for Christmas. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.